You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland. And we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Ahoy and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, your captain. There's Chuck, your other captain, and your third captain, Jerry. All of us equal captains here. Is out there hovering around silently like the creepiest captain of all, even creepier than Captain Steubing.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that, of course, makes this Stuff You Should Know.
I always loved it when Captain Steubing would have the rare love storyline.
Yeah.
You'd throw him a bone every now and then.
Yes.
So good. He's usually just overseeing the love of others, you know.
Exactly. He was a father figure, so that's why it was off-putting when he had his own love thing.
Was it off-putting for you?
Yeah. But he wants to see Captain Steubing, you know, go all the way.
We should mention, and I wish I knew her name, but for many, many years, one of our young listeners asked us to do Titanic at every turn.
Oh.
And I imagine that young girl is now a grown woman, probably, who like, doesn't listen anymore. But who knows?
Who knows? Also, Chuck, I think most recently it was requested by our Scottish correspondent, Noah.
Oh.
Don't you remember when he said hi last time?
Sure. I don't remember the Titanic part, but Noah, I'm happy for Noah to take the place of this young girl who left us. Like yesterday's news.
Yeah.
Which I just can't prove.
Used us up and just threw us away, Chuck.
Yeah, I think we resisted for so long because the movie is so linked to this event. And the movie, despite its faults, did a really pretty accurate job of, and I know that was important to James Cameron, of kind of really telling the accurate story of exactly what happened. So we were like, why bother?
Yeah, there's actually, from the filming of that movie, they may have settled at least one major mystery as to what happened when it sank.
The Jewel of the Sea?
What happened to the Grand Staircase, which they found when they finally discovered the Titanic later on in the 80s, was just totally missing. It was now like a seven-story vertical, basically an elevator shaft, a huge hole, and none of the staircase remained. And when they filmed that movie, The Titanic, the Grand Staircase detached and started to float away. And James Cameron was like, I'll bet you that's exactly what happened to the real Titanic.
And I have a feeling that Jewel of the Sea isn't even right. What was it called? It had a name.
Gem of the...
There's so many angry people right now. The heart of the
jam
ocean?
Of the... on it.
I think it was the heart of the sea, the heart of the ocean, something like that.
The Jewel of the Wind.
Did you like the movie?
Yeah, it was fine. You remember Thomas Jefferson's Bible where he cut out all the magic mumbo jumbo and just had like the morality of the whole thing? Uh-huh. If you could go through and cut out like the love story of that movie, I would probably like it much more.
Well, I kind of disagree there because you got to frame it around something.
Whoa.
You got to frame it around some kind of a story of people. Are you just saying you would have done another person's story?
Yeah, why not just throw Captain Steubing in there and have him have the love story?
I thought the love story was good. I just think Jim Cameron is, I think he can be a little ham-fisted with his screenwriting sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
And there was some stuff like that I remember even at the time, like Billy Zane, you know, little pithy comments like, you know, that Picasso, who's ever heard of him, that'll be never be worth a thing, like, or something like that. I just remember at the time being like, come on, man.
Billy Zane does what he's told on set.
The Zane.
So, yeah, there was another one. I'd forgotten about this line, but somebody else was basically saying the same thing that you are about that movie or James Cameron's writing.
Yeah.
That when Leo was, you know, running with Kate Winslet through First Class, mm-hmm. and the band is playing, mm-hmm. and he stops for a second and goes, "Music to drown to. Now I know I'm in First Class."
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, the whole thing's just rife with that kind of stuff. But overall, I mean, just the fact that, like, they went to the extremes that they did to try to get it as accurate as possible and overlaid, like, a romantic love story on it. Like, it was a good movie in a lot of ways, in so many more ways than it was a bad movie, that it's just overall a really good movie.
Yeah, I think the most brilliant decision in that movie was to have that beginning bit where it's a little ham-fisted, but the part where Bill Paxton mm-hmm. and the sea nerds go over exactly how it sank.
Yeah.
That I don't think a lot of people understood that, and understanding that as you're watching the movie is pretty critical, so I think that was pretty smart.
Yep. Yes, indeed. And one other thing about that movie, we'll never mention it again for the rest of these two episodes, I'm sure, but it costs about almost exactly half, adjusted for inflation, to make the movie Titanic as it did to make the Titanic.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and we just did an episode of Movie Crush, basically.
There you go. That was a mini crush.
Although Nate DeMeo, this was actually his pick, our buddy Nate.
Oh, is that right? Palace. He did mm-hmm. Titanic?
He did.
That's awesome, man. That doesn't surprise me at all.
All right.
I mean, he would love a movie like that. That's set, you know, like his, like, really accurate historical fiction. That would totally be up his alley.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking, believe it or not, everybody. I don't know if you figured this out yet. We're talking about the Titanic finally at long last. And like we were saying, you know, we kind of put this off because the movie had just become so widespread that we basically had to wait out its after effects. But I feel like we've finally reached that. Mm-hmm. So I've been interested in the Titanic since I was just a young kid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, when they found the Titanic in 1985, like, I was at just the right age to really get sucked into that.
Yeah.
And I think the Titanic was probably the first thing that introduced me to, like, the fascinating creepiness of looking at things that aren't supposed to be underwater, but now
yeah.
are. It's just perfect for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's still really cool. Like, I was looking at pictures today of that stern sitting there underwater, and it's still just, like, there's something about it that you can't not look at it and just stare at it.
I know. And I'm, like, waiting for the day when things become, when technology reaches to the point where we can just explore every square inch of the Titanic on the bottom. I'm really looking forward to that. But so I knew a lot about the Titanic to begin with, but just researching this, it dawned on me, like, I mean, there's just so much I didn't know that I found in the time spent researching this. But it also dawned on me that there is just so much more. Like, some people dedicate, like, this is their hobby, like, learning and talking and researching and reading and thinking about the Titanic.
Yeah, and, you know, this is going to be a two-part episode, and we're going to do it Stuff You Should Know style in probably about 90 minutes, but I'm quite sure there are podcasts out there fully dedicated to the Titanic where it's like, you know, and now episode 120, The Cutlery, where people right. know, like you were saying, people are obsessed with it and they know all the details. We're going to, I'm sure, get some stuff kind of wrong because we're not experts, but
right.
we're going to give it the old Stuff You Should Know treatment, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, I knew a lot about the Titanic. There's plenty of people out there who, like, dedicate themselves to it. But just learning about this, like, it's just such a huge monumental thing. A lot of people divide, like, the 19th century, the old era, and the modern age upon the sinking of the Titanic. Like, that's how colossal a thing it's become. But at the time, I mean, it was actually not that big of a deal. Like, it was a maiden voyage of the Titanic, but its sister ship, the Olympic, had already sailed, and that was actually kind of a big thing. The Titanic wasn't even sold out when it underwent its voyage. Actually, in retrospect, that was a very good thing. But there's a lot to learn from the Titanic, just researching it, even if you do feel like you already know basically everything about it.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And I saw that movie a bunch.
So, like I said, the Titanic had a sister ship, the Olympic, and it also had another sister ship, which was originally dubbed the Gigantic. But after the Titanic sank, they went back and renamed the Gigantic the Britannic, because I think maybe they'd be like, well, we had enough hubris to last a lifetime with the Titanic. But these three ships came out of a dinner, actually, between a guy named J. Bruce Ismay, who was the chairman of the White Star Line, which owned those three ships, and another guy, what was his name, Peary?
Lord William Peary, and their wives, Florence, who was married to Bruce, and Margaret Montgomery, originally Carlyle, and that, you know, that name will come back in just a second, so just put a pin in her.
So this dinner was basically about how to compete with the Cunard lines. The Cunard people were eating White Star's lunch to a degree because they had just released the Mauritania and the Lusitania. And I think the Mauritania set the speed record. These things could make it across the Atlantic in 5 days, which was very, very fast at the time. And White Star couldn't keep up. So they decided from this dinner, what if instead of trying to make faster and faster ships, we just kind of go with our thing and make them bigger and more luxurious so people want to spend that extra day? It took White Star 6 days to make it across. People want to spend that extra day because the ship is so ridiculously luxurious that they choose ours instead. And not only was this the birth of the Titanic and the Olympic and the Britannic, it was basically the birth of the cruise industry as we understand it today. Just basically making these huge floating luxury hotels. That kind of became born from this dinner as well.
Yeah, and so they said, you know, we want to make them about 1.5 times the size of anything that Cunard is putting out there. Mm-hmm. And they started sketching around a little bit, and they sketched up a couple of masts and 4 smokestacks. And I think by the time they got to the engineering phase, they said, by the way, we really only need 3 of these. And they said, no. We must have 4. We want it to look symmetrical, and we'll figure out something to do with that 4th one, which they did. It became a ventilation system, which was pretty smart. Mm-hmm. And initially, Alexander Montgomery Carlyle was the head designer, who was Margaret, Lord William Peary's wife's brother.
Okay.
So it was his brother-in-law that was the initial designer, and then that was eventually handed over to Peary's nephew, Thomas Andrews, and he was the guy played by Victor Garber in the movie.
The dude from Alias. The dad from Alias, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I never saw Alias, but I know that when you're on TV, that's what you're most famous for.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, except in our case.
Right. Always going against the grain. Yeah, for sure. So Thomas Andrews would become the chief designer of the ship. He did an amazing job of it. But the ship itself, the Titanic, was something like 882 feet long, which is a little longer than the Trans-American Pyramid in San Francisco is. The building in San Francisco is tall.
Yeah.
That's enormous. Yeah.
Imagine tipping that into the ocean.
Yeah. And then you have, like, and the Titanic was slightly longer than that. It was also 92 feet wide, and it had a gross weight of 45,000 tons. It was just by far the biggest ship that had ever been built. And so, like, the idea of bigness and indestructibility kind of was part of the Titanic's whole jam, like, from the outset.
Yeah, and there was one sort of fateful mistake. And, you know, Titanic is one of those things where a lot of people have, in hindsight, said, well, there was, of course, the iceberg.
Sure.
But there were also this and this and this that happened that could have led to, you know, its ultimate demise. And one of those things was the rivets on the Titanic. There were 3 million wrought iron rivets that apparently, upon further examination, contained about 3 times the amount of slag residue as was allowable. Mm-hmm. And I think the result of that was when they're exposed to cold, they become more brittle. Mm-hmm. And so some people have posited that those, you know, it was a well-built ship for the most part, but those rivets could have been weaker than they should have been when push came to shove.
Yeah. And I mean, if your rivets are the weak link in the chain, that's trouble right there.
Big trouble.
But yeah, not all of them were wrought iron, but enough of them were. And I also saw that they were double riveted, and they probably should have been triple riveted from what I saw in some engineering blog.
You got a triple rivet.
Exactly. Everybody knows that.
Sure.
So they also had two engines on board that were just enormous. Each one was about 30 feet tall.
Yeah.
And they were capable of producing 30,000 horsepower, which is about the same energy produced by 10 diesel locomotives, just these two engines. And they could push the ship pretty fast, something like, I think 22 knots was the top speed it hit. And like I said, the Mauritania had set the speed record at something like 23.9, I think, as far as the record goes, and it lasted until 1929. So the Titanic wasn't setting speed records or anything like that, but it was still going awfully fast, especially considering the size it was. But it was thanks to those huge engines and the enormous propellers that they outfitted the ship with, too.
Oh, man. Those, like, if you're at home and you can access photographs safely, I strongly encourage you to look up some of these pictures. Just the pictures of the propellers are amazing. There are two three-blade propellers that were about 23 and a half feet in diameter, and then one four-blade propeller that was about 17 feet in diameter. And just seeing a photograph of these things is unbelievable to behold, like how big these things are.
Yeah. Again, just bigness. It was just a common theme, you know? One of the other things that the Titanic had that was pretty innovative was that, so underwater in the hull, what would be beneath the sea surface, as far as the boat was concerned, were 16 bulkhead compartments that had all sorts of things. Like one held the coal, or I think multiple ones held all the coal that the Titanic consumed, something like 600 tons a day to get that thing to move. And then there were just all sorts of other just like rooms that were beneath sea level. And each of these rooms had an automatic door that would shut it off and seal it. They were watertight. So if any of these compartments caught water, started taking on water, it could fill up. And as long as that door was shut, the Titanic would just be able to keep on keeping on, basically. So that was a real innovation that combined with its bigness and just the amount of steel that was put into it, combined to kind of create this idea that the Titanic was unsinkable. That's where that comes from, largely from those compartments.
Yeah, I think they said two of the four could flood, and they said really up to four of these could flood.
Right.
But no more than four.
Yeah, put a pin in that one.
And on that coal, there were 29 steam boilers. And if you're thinking, like, how much coal, you said 600 tons a day.
A day.
That was 162 furnaces of 200 men shoveling coal basically nonstop.
Yeah, there was actually a fire aboard the Titanic. Like, the Titanic was on fire when it was taking on passengers, right? And it was because those coal deposits, one of them had caught fire. And when you have coal that's on fire in that situation, basically the only way to put it out is to use that coal that's on fire. So not only were they, you know, shoveling under routine conditions, they were shoveling even more coal than normal to keep the fire from spreading.
Yeah, and that's another one of those things that people have now, some people, experts have gone back and said the fire could have started up to 3 weeks before they even set sail, and that it could have weakened some of those holds. They found evidence of like some burn marks and stuff like that, where they said it could have weakened some of that metal. And, you know, it sounds very strange to have a fire going for 3 weeks and say, here we go, everybody.
Right, exactly.
But that was the deal.
Plus, it also just gets across how enormous Titanic was, that it could have a fire and just be like, whatever.
Right.
It's all good. We're the Titanic. But yeah, they discovered a picture that shows some sort of like kind of a stripe across the hull of the ship that is about where the iceberg hit it. And they said that's from that coal fire, we think, which is surprising. Still, after all this time, I think that's another reason why the Titanic story is so engrossing, is there's just so much still that people are learning about it, even 109 years on.
Oh, totally. You also have to remember, when you build something this big, you also have to build the things that help you build this thing, because they didn't exist.
Yeah.
So they had to get a boat slip that could accommodate it. So they built this enormous White Star dock, and then something called the Great Gantry, which was, it sort of looks like a big, sort of like a skeleton of a big airplane hangar. You should look at these pictures too. It's pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. But it was a series of 10 cranes, basically, that held this boat in place while it was being built. It could lift the people up to work on it, lift materials up to wherever they needed to go. And it's actually something to behold in itself, like seeing the Titanic suspended like above the ground like that.
Yeah, and it took 11,000 people to build this ship. 11,000 people. And they built it. They built the actual ship itself. And was launched into the water, I think, although it was basically always in the water because it was basically impossible to dry dock.
Well, not when it was in the hangar. It was sitting up there.
Okay, you're right. Sorry. But it was actually launched into the water then on May 31st, 1911. But it didn't have any interior. It didn't have its engines yet. It was fully completed March 31st, 1912. And it began its maiden voyage and started taking on passengers on April 10th, 1912. And I propose, Chuck, that before we take on passengers, we take a break.
Let's do it. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friends' money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, so one thing I didn't realize about the Titanic was it had three little stops before it left the UK for New York. It started out in Southampton in England, moved on to Cherbourg, France, and then went on to Queenstown, Ireland before leaving for New York. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. That wasn't in the movie.
That's right, it wasn't. So the Titanic cost about $400 million in 2019 dollars to make, which that's actually less than Carnival Cruise Line's Splendor, which was launched in 2008 for like $450 million. So it's actually, for as luxurious as it was a pretty good bargain, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and here's my deal with cruises. I think we've talked about cruise ships before. I'm not a fan. I've been on exactly one cruise. And just not a fan. And a lot of it has to do with the decor, like shopping mall carpet and bowling alley carpet and, you know, gold railings and things like that, but not like cool looking. I think if they took a note from the, and maybe they are building cruise ships like this now, but if they took a note from the Titanic and other ships of the day today and had that really nice wicker furniture and some, you know, if not iron, some stuff painted to look like iron and not so much of that shiny gold shopping mall garbage look, I think I would be more into it. A little more classy, refined thing. And I think they could go a long way toward getting people like me on cruise ships.
There's some that are like that, like kind of some throwback ones.
Are there?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. But I get what you mean. That whole, you know, all you had to say was shopping mall. You kind of nailed it right there.
Like when you look at the Titanic, it looks like something the Kellogg brothers would have been keen on.
Well, it's funny you say that because we mentioned this in the Kellogg brothers episode, but they had equipment on board the Titanic in gym. And the gym happened to be located on the boat deck, which was the same place where the captain's bridge was, FYI, in case anyone ever asks you.
Yeah, should we talk about the various decks?
Yeah, I think we should. There are a number of them, actually, and they they lettered them by letter, appropriately enough.
That's right. So there's that boat deck, like you said, where the bridge, the gym, and I think just sort of that nice, lovely pine open deck is. You had the promenade deck, which is the first deck, deck A, and that had those two first-class staircases that you were talking about, had a lounge, had a reading and writing room, had the all-male first-class smoking room.
Yeah, only a lot of all-male places.
Sure.
They had the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
There was the Veranda Cafe in Palm Court, which is really lovely, if you go look at pictures of this as well.
Yeah, that's up my alley as well.
Yeah, the Palm Court.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice, right?
Yeah, I knew you'd love it because I was like, look at all that wicker furniture. Chuck's going to go crazy wicker. For this. They would never allow that in a mall.
What's on Deck B?
Deck B, friend, I thought you'd never ask, included the first-class cabins and suites, the restaurant, Café Parisien, which was this all-male second-class smoking room, third-class poop deck, which is where the third-class people kind of strolled around like gerbils.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also kept some of the larger cargo equipment on the poop deck for the third-class people that uses obstacles maybe to climb over and stay fit.
Yeah, they tried to hide most of that stuff.
Yeah,
they took
yeah.
great care in making sure that it looked just like a luxury kind of hotel and not, you know, and that's one of the reasons why they didn't have as many lifeboats, but, you know, we'll get to that.
So, yeah, that was something that I also didn't know about the Titanic is that the designers and builders really went to great lengths to make it as luxurious as possible for everybody from first class to third class, which is also called steerage. You know, just over the years, it's been made into such a class conflict social stratification fable.
Well, it kind of was.
It definitely was, but really it just kind of followed the conventions of the day.
Yeah.
But because of the conventions of the day, a lot of people died who otherwise might not have, which we'll talk about, believe me. It's just really, people have kind of glomped onto that. And especially 100 years later, it just seems so bizarre and awful to us. But at the time, I mean, this is just the way things were. But because of that, you know, that whole idea that it's like, you know, there's third class and there's first class. You just kind of missed the point that they were like, even in third class, this was incredible luxury compared to what they were used to for passages like this. And it was because the designers purposefully made it that way.
Yeah. I mean, they were mostly immigrants coming to America for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like you said, it was appropriate luxury for third class. Like, it wasn't like the rooms weren't these big open rooms with like 30 bunk beds and no door. Right. They were private rooms. They had doors on their rooms. I think they were there six people per room down there?
I saw four. I also saw six.
Okay. Not too bad, though. They had little wash basins in each room, which was a really big deal and a big luxury. Although I do think they had only two bathtubs for third class to share.
Yeah.
Among the 700 plus people.
One for men and one for women. And I saw that explained away as third class passengers probably thought that you could develop respiratory illness by bathing too much. Oh, so they probably wouldn't have had much of an issue with that. It doesn't seem as bad as it does to us in retrospect.
Yeah, I don't think I would have taken a bath. I would have just been, it's like, I wouldn't take a poop on a bus trip.
I'm with you, man. I hope I never, ever go to jail for any extended period of time because I would have a big problem with the pooping thing.
You mean when it's just the little silver thing in the corner with all the other people in there?
Yes, yes. I mean, like, yes, yeah, I think that's a big problem. That would be a problem for me. I think that would be a problem for anybody. I feel bad. I really feel that's a terrible aspect, I think, of jail life. But yes, yes, yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, so where were we? Well, ironically, we were on the poop deck. Right. Deck C was the shelter deck. I don't think we said deck B was the bridge deck, but deck C is the shelter deck. Purser's office there, third class smoking room, second class library and lounge. You know, everything is very divided by class. Everyone needs their smoking rooms because everybody smoked. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Saloon deck, deck D. What do you got in there?
First class reception room and the dining saloon.
Sure.
When you showed up for dinner, you would probably sit in the reception room and maybe like have a drink while you're waiting to be seated. If you showed up a little early,
that's the best.
From what I saw, agreed. From what I saw, the dining saloon, the actual dining room, was large enough to seat all of the first class passengers at once.
Oh, wow.
And I think the second class one was just enormous. Second class, like, is almost never talked about when you just generally talk about the Titanic. It's always first or third. But there's a huge second class, a huge space for second class. I think it sat a couple thousand people at once. Third class, I think, was enough to serve third class passengers over three sittings, I believe, maybe even more than that, maybe four.
All right. That's still a lot.
It is still a lot. But yeah, for first class, you probably had just one sitting.
And I think when you mentioned deck B, that restaurant was an a la carte restaurant. So it's sort of like modern cruise ships. There's the big dining room.
Right.
But then there's also the pizza place and the this and the that. And I think the little a la carte restaurant was one of those.
It's like the mall food court.
Except probably not as good.
Deck E was the second and third class cabins. It's called the upper deck. And then the middle deck, deck F, this is a little confusing, was the third class saloon, the Turkish bath, which they not too long ago got some really good photos of lurking there at the bottom of the Atlantic. It's amazing. But the Turkish bath was kind of like what you call the spa aboard a ship today.
Yeah, maybe some of the – well, actually, I guess the Kellogg stuff was in the gym.
Yeah, I believe it was all in the gym because it was like the shaky band and I can't remember what else. I think the thing where they would loosen up the poop with the suntan bed – I can't remember exactly, but there were definitely multiple pieces of Kellogg equipment, and it was in the gym, yeah.
So then you've got the lower deck, the Orlop deck. That's where you could play squash if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. They had a post office. There was a lot of, you know, people love to send posts when they're on an ocean voyage.
I know, but I was thinking about that. You just show up at the post office, and they're like, okay, thanks. We'll mail it when we get to the same place at the exact same time as you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It seems so dumb.
But I think it's being postmarked by the Titanic, which is, you know, what you
want. Okay, gotcha.
You're like, There's someone working in the post office that literally turns everyone away. Why don't you just hang on to that and mail it when we get there?
Right. Well, yeah. You're probably better off just dropping it somewhere in New York. You're fine.
There's the carpentry shop, the plumbing shop, electrical workshops. You got to have all that stuff. Mm-hmm. They had these enormous refrigerated rooms that were cooled by these copper pipes, just like miles and miles of copper pipes. And each area, like you could do a whole episode on just the refrigeration of the Titanic and the cheeses and the flowers and the wines and the foods that they had to keep chilled.
And they have. They
pretty did, extensive.
They did it after the cutlery episode.
Probably so.
And so we talked about how luxurious it was. Like, it was just as luxurious as anything was in the world at the time, the Titanic. But there was also kind of like a airy kind of vibe to the whole thing, like the choices in colors and wallpapers and plants, mm-hmm. and all of that, and the wicker furniture was all just kind of light and airy and cheery. So it had a really nice feel to it, from first to third across the board.
Yeah, like steerage wasn't just a rat-infested, gross place to be.
That's how it's always portrayed, you know? Like, basically a floating tenement is how I've always seen it portrayed. And I think that's kind of how James Cameron portrayed it, too, which is, I guess, yeah. Where I got my impression, like you.
I mean, the only thing I remember, I think they maybe showed them in their Leo and his and Fabrizio. And their remember Fabrizio?
Yeah.
In their little room. And then, of course, there was the Irish jig that they danced
right.
Down there when she decided to, you know, slum it with steerage.
Right.
And that did look a little like a you know, an old pub. And it was a brand new boat.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think I said earlier that the Titanic wasn't full when she set sail. Again, this is her maiden voyage. Which accounts for why J. Bruce Ismay, the chairman of the White Star Line, whose father was the founder, I believe, and why Thomas Andrews, the designer of the Titanic and Olympic and Britannic, were both aboard. It was just custom for those people who were in those positions to be aboard a ship for its maiden voyage. But it wasn't sold out. There was room for something like 3,295 people.
Total.
Yeah. There was only 2,229 people. So there was like more room for more than 1,000 passengers, basically, because the crew was virtually full. Like the room for the crew was virtually full, but it was the passengers that hadn't, you know, booked as much as was expected.
Should we take another break?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
All right. Let's take another break and we'll talk about a couple more things here to round out part one of the Titanic, right after this. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friends' money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva Presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva Presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva Presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva Presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing? It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, so this thing, I guess we're where it sets sail, right?
Yeah, I believe so, basically. Yeah, at least from being launched in Belfast, right?
Yeah, so it started out in Belfast, went to Southampton on April 3rd, and then on the 10th, it went and picked up a few people in Southampton, and then went to France, and then to Queenstown, Ireland, to get some more people. Like I said, I never knew, like you, that this is what it was doing, operating basically like an Uber share.
Yeah, I guess so.
You ever done that by accident?
No, I never have. I'm very, very careful.
I did once, and someone, they stopped, and I was like, what's going on? And someone got in, I was like, really, what's going on?
Is this candid camera?
I made a new friend.
Oh, that's nice.
I thought it was in the cash cab.
I don't think he stops to pick up other people. He just asks a lot of questions.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so it's picked up all the folks at this point. In the end, and there is some discrepancy about the final numbers, because a lot of people sold their tickets. A lot of people switched tickets. A lot of people can't quite make it on time. In the case of Leonardo DiCaprio, he wins those tickets in a poker game right before it launches. No way they could have accounted for him.
No, and actually, I mean, that's not exactly that far off. And I suspect it's based loosely on the story of Thomas Hart, who was hired on as a fireman, but went off and got really, really drunk and lost his boarding papers while he was drunk. And they were stolen by somebody else because Thomas Hart showed up and worked, as far as anyone was concerned, as far as the logs went, but it just clearly wasn't that Thomas Hart.
Right.
He just missed it like that. There was one group of wealthy industrialists, starting with Henry Clay Frick, on to J.P. Morgan, and then J. Horace Harding, who transferred boarding papers for suites B-52, 54, and 56, which ultimately were taken on by J. Bruce Ismay. It just turns out all of them had a reason why they suddenly couldn't go toward the last minute.
Yeah, I think the unsinkable Molly Brown's daughter, she was, Molly Brown was portrayed by Kathy Bates. She was the hero of Lifeboat 6 that really wanted to go and try and save people. I think her daughter was supposed to come, but she was studying at the Sorbonne, so she did not. So there's a big list of people. They called it the Just Missed It Club.
Yeah.
And apparently in 1912, the Milwaukee Journal put that number as high as 6,000 people that were saved because they did not sail on the Titanic. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it couldn't have been that much. It's one of those things, I think, where like everyone was at, you know, the game where Michael Jordan scored whatever points.
Right. And, all right.
You know, it's one of those sort of things where history fudges itself a little bit. But in the end, they put the number somewhere around 1,324 passengers and those 884 officers, which is a very high ratio of crew members to passengers.
Yeah, it really is. And speaking of crew, in addition to Thomas Hart, there were the Slade brothers who left Southampton after passing muster, went and got drunk and then came back and they wouldn't lower the gangplank for them again, so they got left behind.
Good for them.
But most of all, there was a guy named Davy Blair, who was an up-and-coming officer for the White Star Line, and he was initially assigned the second officer position, which is huge for an up-and-coming guy. He was at the last minute. I think he sailed from Southampton to Cherbourg, and then at Cherbourg, basically, as somebody who was a more senior officer than him was given that position, and he was moved off to the Olympic, and he was really disappointed about this. There's like a surviving postcard that expresses how upset he was and saddened that he kind of lost that big opportunity. But even more important than that is Davy Blair was on there long enough to be entrusted with the key to the crow's nest locker, which held the binoculars for the
binocular locker.
The binocular locker. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of long been a myth that there were not binoculars on board, but there were. But yeah, he walked with that key, and that key and that postcard sold at auction for like 150 grand or something, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, yeah.
It's amazing.
But that's a big deal because later on they would say that had they had binoculars in the crow's nest, they most definitely would have sighted the icebergs in time to maneuver away from them. The lookout said that later on at an inquiry.
Yeah, and of course, people debated that as well. Hindsight is 20/20, but it certainly wouldn't have hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
No, definitely wouldn't have. So I mentioned some wealthy industrialists. That was mostly first-class passengers. We're all extraordinarily well above average wealthy people. Like, even for wealthy people, they were above average wealthy. And that was reflected in the ticket prices that some of them paid for passage on the Titanic, dude.
Yeah, big money. In today dollars, anywhere from 66 grand to 120 grand for passage.
Yeah, I don't think that fully gets it across because you're like, okay, I can see a billionaire shelling something like that out. You know, it's gaudy and gross. But what really drove it home to me was at the time, so they were paying up to $4,500 in their dollars. And at the time, the average American made $800 a year.
Wow.
And these guys shelled out $4,500 for a one-way ticket. This was not round trip. This was one way from the UK to America.
That's crazy.
$4,500. Isn't that nuts?
Third class steerage, I think, even costs close to $1,000 in today dollars, which is a lot of money. I mean, $35 back then, but that's not cheap.
No, but it was definitely a lot more affordable than $119,000.
That's right. So I guess we should talk a little bit before we wrap up about kind of the controversy over the size of the ship. As we said at the beginning, they wanted it to be the biggest and the best, all three of those sister ships, just to be the biggest thing ever, to really rub it in the Cunard Line's face. And that presented some problems, though, one of which was the Board of Trade didn't know how many lifeboats, or at least hadn't acted on it and said how many lifeboats you should have, because in the 1894 Merchant Shipping Act, they topped out at 10,000 tons and said you need 16 lifeboats if you're 10,000 tons. Titanic was 35,000 tons, and they had 16 lifeboats because that's just where the Merchant Shipping Act ended, and they didn't like the unsightliness of them, so they weren't going to add any. It does not mean, because it was three times the size, they needed 48 lifeboats. I think in retrospect, they said 26 would have done it. Mm. But as we'll get to, you know, the whole accident, the speed at which it sank, it may not have mattered anyway. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the big problems with its size.
That was a very big problem. Yeah, not adding enough lifeboats because they seemed unsightly is not a good move. Another one is that the Titanic only had like 6 or 7 hours of testing before it sailed. And that was mostly just to check its maneuverability. It was never sailed at full speed before it set sail for America. So the testing wasn't very good. And then even more important as far as lifeboats go, they never fully did like a full drill to lower all the lifeboats aboard. And one of the reasons why people died was not just because there weren't that many lifeboats. That was a huge, huge issue. But also because there just wasn't a lot of needed protocol in launching the lifeboats as far as the crew was concerned. A lot of them had come aboard basically the day before they were taking on passengers and didn't even have a post or a position while there were passengers on that first day.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically an HR nightmare with people showing up as the passengers are showing up going, where do I go? What do you want me to do? And they're like, have you ever waited tables? Have you ever shoveled coal?
Right.
And they were just kind of sticking people where they needed them. And like you said, I think they only were able to lower 2 of those 16 lifeboats. And in the end, what that also means is you don't know how long it's going to take to lower them all. So it was just, they were kind of just flying or sailing blind.
Right, exactly. So those were just really, really big problems that would turn out to be extremely important when the ship started going down. Because any one of those things being slightly different or improved or not being a problem means that people's lives definitely would have been saved. You can debate like how many people would have been saved, but
yeah.
there was definitely room for more people to have survived the Titanic than did.
Yeah, there was also a weird incident that happened on April 10th that possibly altered history. The Titanic was being pulled out by tugboats, I think as the story goes, the captain kind of a little too early said, go ahead and release us and we'll just fire this baby up. Mm-hmm. He was really itching to get those propellers spinning.
And he said, and give me a toot toot while you're at it.
And when he started turning those propellers, it was a big violent suction and it sucked this other steamer, the SS New York, into its wake. Mm-hmm. It was attached to the Oceanic and it started pulling this boat over to it. I think it snapped away from the Oceanic. It kind of ripped off the moorings. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for quick action by tugboats reattaching, pulling the New York away, mm-hmm. and then the captain realizing what was going on and hitting the engine hard and turning out of the way. Mm-hmm. Like it shows pictures that they missed hitting each other by just a few feet.
That's crazy.
And not only would that, if it had actually hit it, that would have caused a delay that could have altered history. But there was a slight delay anyway, just because of this incident.
Oh, wow.
That, you know, who knows if those, you know, events would have lined up with that iceberg in there at the exact moment it needed to be.
Yeah, that's an amazing point, Chuck. I hadn't seen that one. So they leave Queenstown, Ireland on April 11th, 1912, I believe, right?
Yes.
And start heading out to sea full speed ahead, and we will stop here. What do you think?
Boy, what a cliffhanger. What's going to happen?
I don't know. We'll find out in the next episode of Stuff You Should Know.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.